You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. As awareness of sexual assault on college campuses grew over the past several years, one result is many colleges and universities have implemented so-called mandatory reporting policies. 9 of the 14 schools in the Big Ten, including Michigan State University, designate all employees as mandatory reporters, which means these employees must report any student disclosure of sexual assault to university officials and, in some cases, police, with or without the survivor's consent. A recent paper published in American Psychologist points to unanswered questions about mandatory reporting and the possibility of negative consequences for survivors and schools. Lead author Catherine Holland is with us now. Dr. Holland received her PhD in psychology and women's studies from the University of Michigan. She now teaches at the University of Nebraska. What got you started on this research?
That's a great question. I would say that it is a combination of my work previously as a victim advocate and then also my work doing research while I was at the University of Michigan. I worked as a rape crisis counselor at Rape Victim Advocates in Chicago when I was there completing my undergraduate degree. And sort of what we know about sort of best practices for a trauma-informed response to disclosure is that the most important thing is to communicate that you believe the person, that you support them, and then to find out what it is that they want and need, and then, you know, do what you can to help them get that. We know that, you know, regaining a sense of control and autonomy is really important for healing after an assault.
So I'm hearing you say it's important to let the survivor kind of be the driver of what to do or not to do?
Exactly, yes. It's really about understanding what they need and then helping them get that. And a support person, their response to a disclosure can actually have a huge influence in sort of healing. It can help healing in great ways, and it can also harm healing as well and can actually exacerbate the negative effects of that sexual assault. So, for instance, survivors may stop disclosing altogether if they're experiencing negative responses afterwards. And so when I was at the University of Michigan, I had the opportunity to sort of watch our sexual misconduct policy sort of evolve as they were updating and changing it, and just sort of seeing on a national level, it seemed as though these mandatory reporting policies were getting sort of wider and wider and broader and sort of capturing a larger number of employees under the scope of who is considered to be a mandatory reporter. And as a previous work as an advocate and as a researcher who sort of understands trauma-informed responses to disclosure, I had some questions or concerns about what these policies might mean in terms of survivors' autonomy and control. And I wanted to find out more about them and understand the sort of research undergirding them and to sort of get a better picture about these policies and whether they might be helpful or whether they could potentially be harmful.
So your paper in American Psychologist explores four assumptions operating in these college mandatory reporting policies. Briefly, what are those and do they achieve their desired outcomes?
So the first assumption is that these policies will increase the number of reports. So basically, we'll see at campuses, you know, the sort of wider, the broader the policy, we'll have more reports coming to light. And that, you know, then would mean that universities would be able to potentially remedy more cases of assault. They could investigate and adjudicate them, and they could also report more accurate statistics about the prevalence of crime on campus.
And what does the reality show us?
So there's no clear evidence that that will be the case. None of the research indicates, I mean, there's no clear evidence that this will surface more reports of violence. And in some cases, it could potentially suppress disclosures, as there's some evidence to suggest that survivors may be less likely to come forward if there are very sort of wide net mandatory reporting policies.
Okay. So what's, and then there is this assumption that this mandatory reporting will help survivors.
Yes. The second assumption is that it will benefit survivors in some way, for example, allowing them to connect with supports and resources. And again, there is a little bit of mixed evidence here. There's some evidence to suggest that in some ways people see some benefits of these. So, for example, it can hold people perceive it as holding schools more accountable, and it could potentially help survivors connect with resources on campus. However, again, the conflicting evidence similarly states that it could actually, again, suppress survivors from coming forward if they're worried about their information basically sort of snowballing out of their hands if it sort of triggers this chain reaction of additional disclosures that they don't have control over. They may not disclose at all for fear of losing control over who knows. And again, it's sort of sharing your story to who and when you want is sort of one last thing they have control over. And again, we just know that that's very important for healing and recovery after an assault. So no clear evidence that it will benefit survivors.
And then there's this assumption that mandatory reporting will benefit school employees.
Yes. One issue is it can be confusing for school employees if they are or if they aren't a reporter. And there's some sort of evidence, you know, if you just make everybody a reporter, there's no question about whether you are or you aren't or whether you sort of wear that hat. And so, sort of on the surface, that may seem simpler. However, again, there's really no clear evidence that it's benefits employees, and in some instances, it can make their job harder. So myself, for example, I would not be able to do the research that I do if I was a mandatory reporter, because I would have to report all of my participants' experiences to the Title IX coordinator, for example. And I even had, currently I'm recruiting participants for a study right now, and during the screening phase, one of the participants explicitly asked me if I would have to report it because she had not reported it and did not want to report it, and she would not want to participate if I would have to do that. So it can hinder research. It can also potentially hinder teaching as well. And more anecdotal evidence of faculty members experiencing issues with students disclosing when they're teaching content related to gender, sexuality, or violence. So it could potentially actually make employees' jobs more challenging. It can hinder this sort of trust-building process, for example.
And then there's this assumption that mandatory reporting will help the institution by basically giving it some protection from legal liabilities.
Yes. The last assumption is the idea that it can help insulate the institution against legal liability. So, for instance, making sure that it is actually in compliance with Title IX, for example. However, and institutions are responding to multiple, often conflicting directives coming out of the Office for Civil Rights. And so it's been confusing for administrators. But on the other hand, there also isn't any clear evidence. So schools are not required to make all of their employees mandatory reporters. That is very clear. And there's some emerging sort of legal analysis. So Merle Weiner, for example, has a new paper in the Tennessee Law Review that is arguing that in some instances it goes against some of the sort of intentions of Title IX in institutional response to sexual assault. So it doesn't necessarily protect schools against legal liability. However, that has been a concern that institutions have had and has definitely been a sort of driving factor behind their expansion.
So here your study finds mandatory reporting policies are built on basically assumptions that are not empirically sound. Did universities do their due diligence in crafting these policies?
I think that is a difficult question because I think that on one hand, there are, you know, and I've talked to administrators who, you know, really genuinely believe that these policies will do good things. And I think part of the problem, too, is that they're also sort of mirrored after child abuse reporting policies, which people very clearly have seen, can have benefits, for example. However, you know, the vast majority of college students are not children, and so it's not a clear-cut, you know, comparison there. And so I think that they weren't implemented maliciously, if that sort of answers your question. I think that it's sort of this combination of, you know, wanting to believe that this could be helpful, and then also this sort of piece around like legal liability and feeling like this is what you have to do in order to be compliant with Title IX. And so I think the sort of confusion around that legally has been a driving factor. And there are some organizations that have, you know, encourage schools to use more wide net reporting policies or universal reporting policies. The Association for Title IX Administrators, for example, gave a policy template that included a sort of all employee policy that schools could use to craft their own policies. And so I think that institutions were sort of, you know, responding to multiple sort of conflicting pieces of information. And I think there are some administrators who do think that these will genuinely be helpful. However, I think that it's important for us to pause and at least evaluate the evidence because it's possible that these policies will actually do the exact opposite of what some folks are hoping they will, which is to discourage survivors from coming forward and contribute to more of a sort of unwelcome or hostile climate on campus where they feel like they can't actually come forward and disclose because they may lose control over that process.
Finally, as we see from your paper, with universities putting basically all their eggs in this legalistic approach of investigate, adjudicate, rinse, lather, repeat, are there changes you might recommend, and perhaps institutions that could provide an example of how to do it right?
Yes, and I think there are some institutions that have been pushing against these policy approaches and saying, actually, this is not necessarily what you have to do. So, for example, if the goal is to provide services, for example, right, like they think they'll benefit, you know, survivors by connecting them with services. You know, if you want to connect someone with services, reporting to the police or reporting to an investigator may not be the most effective way for that to happen because they don't actually provide services, right? An investigator has to remain as unbiased, you know, as possible. And so they actually can't give a survivor what they need, which is, you know, complete support and sort of standing in their corner. And so, for example, at the University of Oregon, they have implemented a new policy where they have a small and select group of employees who are required to report disclosures. This is typically people with top levels of leadership or with a lot of responsibility over student well-being and student life. And then the rest of the employees are, they're calling it a student-directed reporter, where basically what they do is they find out what that does the survivor want them to report it or not, follow what that person wishes, and then help connect them to a confidential source of support on campus who's in the position to provide more of those supports and services that someone might need after healing. And so I think that the goal is to really find more avenues for voluntary disclosures, right, for survivors to feel more comfortable voluntarily coming forward and disclosing, rather than having more of these sort of forced reports where survivors are sort of potentially going to be pushed into that process when they're not ready. And so I think that a policy approach like that is a sort of innovative approach that really is at the heart of what this is about, making sure that survivors are connected with the supports that they need and connecting them with the people who are actually in the position to provide that support.
The paper is Compelled Disclosure of College Sexual Assault, published in American Psychologist. Lead author Catherine Holland is an assistant professor of psychology and also has an appointment in the Department of Women's and Gender Studies at the University of Nebraska. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.